Hi everyone, you're listening to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but our love for queer folks most definitely isn't. Happy Pride. This is episode 128. I'm one of your hosts, Anne, and as always, my other host, Marcus, is with me.
That was really awkward.
I know. Thank you. It's okay. That's what I'm here for an awkward intro. Where I stare you down in the same room. Remember when we used to record across the planet?
Yeah, we did.
Was it awkward then?
No.
No. But I couldn't give you a death stare that's like, say something.
Not in the
it
same way.
It doesn't convey as well over Discord. Anyway, thank you. Yes, I'm here to be awkward and to celebrate Pride. So happy Pride, everyone. Happy Pride, Marcus.
Happy Pride.
Unfortunately, we're almost at the end of the month, but we'll keep the train going all year. Actually, I didn't even put this in the show notes, but speaking of Pride, we went to Disneyland Pride Night last week. This is our third year in a row?
I think so, yes.
That's pretty fun, hey? Mm-hmm. The best part being DJ Stitch. No? What do you like about
it? No, I like Stitch. It's just fun. I like any opportunity to go somewhere where there's all kinds of queer people all around. Mm-hmm. It's a good time. And I like that Disney in California is still running this event. Mm-hmm. And I like that it's just a good time and it's at night. So it's also the whole point of the After Dark events is that it's limited to only people who bought tickets for that event. So at, what is it, like 8 o'clock, all of the regular people in Disneyland have to leave.
Yeah, all the schlebs, schmucks, anyway, yes.
Yeah, they all have to leave. And then the only people left are the people who came for the party. So it's good. It's a lot less busy.
Yeah, I was telling you that I vastly prefer going to Disney through the After Dark events we did. Well, Pride last year, but then also the 90s night, or was it 90s, or was it the Disney Channel cartoons?
No,
I think it was 90s themes. Yeah, one. But those are always more fun because you actually get to ride rides and not wait forever, and it's not as hot, it's less crowded, generally less kids overall, so just a little less hectic, you know, but still fun.
Yeah. Oh, I also like our favorite restaurant. What is it? Red Rose Tavern?
I think it's Red Rose Tavern. Yeah, the Beauty and the Beast one.
Yes. They always have nice food.
Yeah.
Like better than you would think for a theme park. Although I think Disney food is actually pretty good in general, but I really like their stuff. They always seem to have unique new dishes when we go and tasty stuff for sure.
Yeah, and it's funny because we didn't even set out to like go there again, but it seems like every time we look at the menus, we're like, oh, everything at Red Rose looks really good. Let's try that one again. So we have all new stuff and keep going back.
Yeah, and it's usually a pretty chill restaurant.
Yeah, it's not super busy.
Yeah.
We even go, like, so the After Dark event, I think you can technically buy an earlier entry, but with the After Dark ticket you can enter the park from 6 p.m. Yes. So when you first go in, you are there with the daytime folks who are probably slowly trickling out because they've been all day and they're getting ready to head home, but it's still a bit busy. But we head straight to eat usually right after we go in, and we made a beeline for Red Rose Tavern, and it was not busy at all, really.
No, yeah.
Plenty of seating. And I was reminiscing about our last trip to Tokyo when we went to Tokyo Disney Sea, and it was like so hard to find seating anywhere.
It was crazy busy.
That was during the day. And also, honestly, don't think the food is as good there.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I wonder why that is.
I don't know.
Anyway, a lot of fun. Disney After Dark. Recommend going to one of those events if you're ever able to. Like the, was it Oogie Boogie's Bash is always fun. I say always, but we've only been once, so I don't know. It was fun the one time. I would go again, but it's one of those ones that always sells out pretty quick. So
Well, there's a lot of dates.
That's true. So at least unlike Pride Night, there are only two dates for that. Yep. But yeah, continuing the Pride Month celebrations, we did our first Pride Market. This was a local market that was pretty cool because it was sort of celebrating the local community and history. And there were a lot of local organizations, nonprofits, and like support groups for different, you know, queer related causes, I should say. So they have like a free clothing, I don't know what they call it, like not a swap, but like a little pop-up boutique. Yeah, closet. They're like, you know, I think it's like a gender-affirming closet is the way they frame it. And so you can go there and pick up clothes. And then they have all different types of resources. They had a really sweet hair salon dedicated their time. So they were giving free haircuts, which I thought was really nice. And also free like hair tinsel and braids. So I got some hair tinsel done. but I was there as one of the shop vendors, one of the local artists. And I think there were only four or five of us. There weren't that many. It was a pretty small market. I remember we kind of showed up and we had an idea already that was probably going to be a bit small because it didn't seem like it was super widely publicized. The list of people, like different groups attending, wasn't super huge. And we're like, oh, well, this will be, you know, a quiet market, but that's okay. And it kind of was. But when we showed up, everybody was super nice and it was like a really nice sense of community there. And then the people who did come as attendees were super supportive and cool. I did very well in terms of my overall sales. And also like people who seemed very interested in my art and what I was doing. So I got a lot of like followers on social media, which isn't necessarily an indicator of anything. But at other markets, I often don't, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be that I changed the signage too. I don't know.
Maybe.
I had a sign for ages that was like at the front of my booth and it said, follow me on Instagram for a free sticker. And no one ever did it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes someone would come up to me and say, like, oh, what's your Instagram? And then I would tell them and then I give them the free sticker because they followed me. But that didn't really go anywhere. So I've been watching like YouTubers who do craft markets and things and their advice for stuff. And I keep seeing that you should have a little sign like where people come to you to pay, where it has all of your links. So I created a new sign that has like multiple QR codes on it and a lot of people used it. So maybe we'll chalk it up to my new sign.
Maybe.
Maybe. Perhaps. But that was really successful. So I was happy to do that. And even if it had been super successful, like monetarily, I think it still would have been considered worthwhile. Because it was just really nice and wholesome. I was like, oh, these people are great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also got a button machine, finally, after over a decade of wanting a button machine. Because I remember all the way back to probably high school, really, was when I first like thought it would be cool to have my own, you know, machine to make buttons, you know. So this is like a button pin back button, those little round metal things that you pin on your coat or your bag or whatever. And like all the cool like old kids would always make buttons and like have their cool buttons on everything. And I thought, oh, I would love to take all my cool like Japanese stationery and stuff and make buttons out of it. And finally, when I got to college, there was some kind of craft group art collective thing that you could rent their space and they had a button machine. So that was my first time actually getting to use one. And then I was really sold on it. I was like, I want to get one. And then I looked up how much they are, and they're like hundreds of dollars. So at the time, I did not get one. Fast forward to now, we have a friend is moving interstate for a new job, and she wanted to get rid of her old button machine. So she sold it to me for a pretty good discount. So I took the plunge and got it. And it was just in time for this first Pride market of the month. So I was able to make some buttons. And I was surprised how popular they were. So I've been using like different cutouts from magazines and papers and just cute things I have, which I certainly have plenty of that. I even used a Nintendo Switch magazine like one of those free pamphlets. I wouldn't even call it a magazine. The freebie mm-hmm. booklets that you pick up in the shop. There was one from a random store in Japan that I brought back with me, and I made like a little button with the Switch controllers because they have cute colors, and somebody bought that one. And
yep.
One of the other ones that someone really liked was the old advertisements for women's clothing, but specifically those like bullet bras. Mm-hmm. So I have a bunch of cutouts of those, and I made buttons out of those. And yeah, they were a big hit at the Pride event. So that was fun. And I'm happy because I want to make a lot of buttons. Everyone will get a button.
Yes.
Yes. So after this, we have two more markets. So hopefully they go well. Mm-hmm. I mean, two more markets for June/Pride. So they're both Pride themed. And I'm excited because it's fun. Feels like a party. I like that.
Yep.
And thank you as always for your assistance. Marcus has been great with assisting with the manual labor, also suggestions for how mm-hmm. to display things. We swapped out our tables for lighter tables, which has been really good.
Yes.
So I feel like we're learning a lot.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah. And next up, we're going to do basically a big 180 and more like just stuff we've been doing/enjoying that doesn't fit in any other section.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember how the next topic became a thing for us? We were just looking for something to watch on YouTube or what?
I think we were just scrolling on YouTube and saw some video for a little like toy record player. And not from anyone we follow or anything. It just showed up in the feed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. A little record player that actually plays records. Okay, mm-hmm. let's watch it. So we watched this random video about these toy record players that are really small that play music, and you can buy like things that come with a randomized selection of the albums and whatnot. So we watched that, and it was fine. And then we looked to see what else this person does on YouTube. It seems like they're all toys, but not just all toy content. It's miniatures toy content. So that's when I learned about Miniverse and Mini Brands, which are two competing, very similar miniature toy brands that sell like the little capsules with like random toys inside.
Yeah, they look like really big gachapon. Yeah. They're like super sized gachapon balls. Yeah.
And then you collect them to complete a set of a certain theme.
Yeah.
And once I learned about that and saw them, I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Uh-huh. And I said, I knew all along, but I didn't think about it, I guess. I see them like in the store sometimes when I'm wandering around. And then I told you about how randomly they, I don't think it was either of these brands, but like miniature food, obviously people like that, but specifically miniatures of like household brand names, you know, like your Cheez-Its or mm-hmm. your Pop-Tarts or whatever. And when I was living in Australia, one of the grocery store chains did some kind of like thing where if you bought $100 or something of groceries, you would get like one free little blind bag. It was like, you know, a McDonald's Happy Meal toy, but it was these weird little foods. I don't know why they do that. It was just a fun thing. So for mm-hmm. a little while, I got a bunch of those just because, you know, that was the grocery store I went to and then I was getting them. But yeah, you could get a little egg carton or, you know, a little carton of milk,
mm-hmm.
all that stuff. But you're into that.
I am now.
Oh, you're in now.
Yeah.
We haven't got any yet, though.
No, we have not.
I should say we have not purchased anything. But, I mean, they seem more involved than I knew or, you know, realized. Like, these mini brands and Miniverse have, like, the versions where it's not just the little toy that you get, but you actually can make it. Kind of reminds me of like Whipple. Remember Whipple? Mm-hmm. I used to do these little Whipple kits where it had like the cream and, you know, it was like a little toy and you would make like a keychain that looks like a strawberry with whipped cream on it and then would harden or whatever. But it's like that, but it's all resin. So they have like little resin kits. One of them was a little tiramisu in a like a Pyrex. And the guy in the video was like layering the different things on and made the tiramisu or made that 20 ice cream, you know. And it's just very funny. I had no idea that they were doing all that. And then this led us to talk about Rement, which is actually something I was into for a little while, a hot minute. And I have some Rements. So we brought out the Rements and talking about the history of Rement, we learned that they... So to preface this, Rement is a Japanese company that does little miniatures. I think they tend to be a little bit tinier than these mini brands in Miniverse, but everybody's got different scales, so I don't really know. But Rement does all different sorts of blind box food and household things and, you know, collabs with Sanrio or what have you. But they apparently tried to break into the American market, right? In the early 2000s.
Yeah, I think it was in 2009 they established a U.S. location, and then they released a collection called Fun Foods or something.
Yes, with a lobster on the front. Yeah. That's really funny.
And that looks like the only collection they released. So
they were ahead of their time.
As far as this is concerned, yeah. Apparently, they would have been very successful if they just waited a little while.
Yeah, really. And Mini Brands and Miniverse only came onto the scene like in 2019 or something. Yeah. So pretty recently. Obviously, Rement has been around in Japan a lot longer than that. But yeah, very fascinating. This is something that we haven't really focused on, even though it's been right here under our noses the whole time.
Yeah.
And now I'm getting ideas about how I could make little like charms or like bag charms, you know, that's very popular right now, that have little foods on them and dorky stuff.
Yeah,
it's dangerous. We better not get into it. You're grinning.
I want to get into
it. You want to get into it.
Not
oh
in
God.
The sense that I want to have complete collections. I just think it could be fun from time to time to get a randomized one.
Like the Taco Bell one.
We'll see.
Yeah, they have a Taco Bell series, a lot of series, and then the really like what. A gross one.
I don't know. I don't want to think about
makes
that.
Makes me think of, what's it, like Garbage Pail Kids or something? Yeah. It's like giving that vibe, which is funny because I feel like culturally we're not in that like, ooh, gross out stuff for kids era anymore. Mm. But speaking of being for kids, I don't think any of this is meant to be for kids. It's all too small.
But and, you, like, it was in the kids section,
it's
in though, the, wasn't it? It was
yeah,
in the toys?
Yeah, it's in the toy section.
Yeah, I don't think it's for children. For one, resin is toxic.
No. You need UV light to do it. It's all, I mean, it's all so tiny and fiddly. It's not like a kid would really have a fun time, I would think, of making any of it.
Yeah, any kid could eat a whole one of these things.
Yes, very easily.
Also, yeah, or very tiny. Remember we saw the Planters peanuts? They opened the Planters peanuts container. And inside were tiny peanuts. Tiny, tiny peanuts.
Yeah.
Obviously fake, but like really tiny. So easy for some child to do all kinds of things with.
I'm surprised there aren't more clear labels over everything. Even in the store, like, so they have like a big box. And in the box is like an opening where all the balls are that you can take out. You would think like, you know, maybe there is a warning, but it isn't like super obvious, like not for children under X age or whatever. They do have like warning, do not eat, like picture on the balls, but it just doesn't seem like super in your face about this isn't for kids, this is not a toy, all that. I don't know. Interesting. Anyway, I mean, I feel like in Japan, they have warnings too, you know, has to be over a certain age or whatever on the box. But yeah, I imagine a lot of like the dollhouse type people who like to, you know, pose their calico critters with things, probably all those types of folks are into these. Or people who like to collect stuff because each little ball set comes with a paper checklist so you can check off all the things as you get them. And clearly it's a very appealing to people who like to collect stuff. That's why I'm worried. I'm worried about you.
No,
you can get the collector bug. It's dangerous.
I won't.
Okay. Pinky promise. Well, speaking of foods, this isn't a miniature food, but as you're listening to this, we're in the midst of the World Cup. And I don't know wherever you're listening from, if it's a big deal there. But it's funny because I don't ever remember the World Cup feeling like a big event when I was in Australia. But maybe it's because it never was there locally when I was living there, right? Right mm-hmm. now, we're here relatively close to LA. The World Cup's happening. And it's like the hype is wild. Like, everybody's so into it. Everywhere yeah. you go, I see people wearing jerseys, people talking about it, people, like, buying different merch and things. And in Walmart, they had Lay's World Cup themed chips. And we bought the, they're called the Brazilian style garlic chips. And I just had to shout out these chips today because they're really good. And if you like garlic, they are so garlicky, but in like the best way, I think. Mm-hmm. So garlicky. I love them.
Yeah, me too.
So I wish they weren't limited edition.
Yeah.
But sadly they are. I'm not sure if the Brazilian style is of the chip or of the garlic sauce.
I don't know. I don't know. I tried to look it up and people were like, what does that mean? And they're like, I don't know.
Okay. Wow. We'll never know. All we know is that they're good. I mean, garlic sauce is always good. Like, we really like that Mediterranean style garlic sauce. Mm-hmm. Also, apparently, there's a Brazilian garlic sauce. Mm. Trader Joe's has really good garlic sauce. I'm going to shout out all the good garlic stuff that we find now. Yeah. So if you like garlic, highly recommend. And now we'll roll into the news segment. I know we're a little bit behind. We haven't got to talk about all of the, you know, not E3 games related stuff, but I figured we could go through a little bit of it and just sort of
just
say
a little bit.
Just a tiny, tiny bit. And what's funny is it really is a tiny fraction of what we even engaged with, because we did watch a lot of the trailers mm-hmm. via Nextlander, right?
Yeah, Nextlander, you know, ex-Giant Bomb folks. Vinny Caravella, for some reason, did like a 4+ hour stream by himself watching many of the streams and like the trailers that were presented in them. And I don't have the link on the top of my head, so we'll just have to put it in the show notes. But Vinny also at some point put together like a website that you can look at to, like, you can go to it and look at, like, okay, Summer Games Fest 2026, click that, and it'll show you, here's all the game trailers that were shown in this stream. Or the Wholesome Games 2026 stream, click that, okay, here's all the games that were shown, here's all the trailers for that. And I think it's really cool that they've opened that up for basically anyone can look at it. It's very handy. Mm-hmm. So I think that's cool, and I like it. So shout out to Nextlander.
Yeah, it's a really cool resource just to, you know, see like, okay, well, what was featured? And you can go through and filter it that way. So we watched that, and then we also watched like all the major streams, I think. Like,
the main console streams.
You know, Summer Games Fest with Jeff Keighley. We watched the Sony State of Play. We watched the Nintendo Direct and the Microsoft whatever.
I don't know what they're called, but yeah. Yes.
So, again, going to be really quick, not definitely not exhaustive, but things that stood out to us, things we either liked or didn't like. So I'm going to start. I'm starting.
Go for it.
Summer Games Fest. I think everyone who has been listening to me talk about games for a while will know I love Monster Hunter. So I was very excited to see that they have announced the Monster Hunter Wilds expansion. It's called Ascendance. It seems to be more flight related with the Sekiret, yeah. And you're going to fly up to a new area, and I'm hyped. I love Monster Hunter. Did not like super get into Wilds for whatever reason. There are probably a few reasons, but you'll be interested to see like what they add, you know, how much it expands, because I think with World, even, I remember I played through World, I beat it, and it was fine. I enjoyed it a lot, but when I was, like, kind of done, I was done. But then Iceborne, the expansion came out, and I played that a lot. So I think that's kind of the way with Monster Hunter. The base game sort of ends, and you're, like, well, there's nothing really else for me to do. But then they add on the expansion and they really find a way to get you hooked to do a lot more. So that might be the way this time too. Then we have Final Fantasy VII Revelation Part 3 has been announced for next year. Marcus, you would be interested in watching me play these, I remember you mentioned, right?
Yeah, I would be interested in watching, not really playing myself, but sure, why not?
Why not? Except for I'm kind of stuck in Rebirth, because it's like so big, you saw it, it's like a big map, mm-hmm. and then there's a million things for you to do. I wish that they just sort of focused it in a little bit more, like narrowed the focus. I really liked how the first one was expanded on the original, but not big open world stuff, so it didn't feel like you could get lost in it. So I wonder if they're, I have a feeling they're going to continue with the you can do all kinds of stuff thing in Revelation, because at this point in the like game's flow, you're at the end of the game, the world's opened up, you're going to get the airship, you can go wherever you want, so there's probably going to be a million things for you mm-hmm. to do. But I'm most excited for Vincent. So I guess we need to play it for him. Then we have a new Resident Evil remake announcement.
Yeah, so it's this time around we're doing Code Veronica. I mean, it just makes sense with it. You know, it's like we're remaking all these games. You got to get to this at some point. Mm-hmm. So why not? I think the Resident Evil remakes and also the new games they're making these days are pretty neat. I think that it's fun. And for most of these games, it has been long enough. You can go ahead and make a remake. I won't be mad. So I'm looking forward to more. Even though it's not like I even played the newest Resident Evil.
I was going to say, when was the last one you played? We're faking.
We watched them. We watched it like twice. We watched one Capsule J stream.
Uh-huh.
And we watched also Next Lander.
Oh, you're talking about 9. But we haven't even seen the end of it.
Not yet.
Yeah. But you haven't played even like the 4 remake.
I don't need to play. I can enjoy in other ways.
Okay. Okay. Sure. Enjoy through osmosis.
Basically.
Well, since you mentioned that you were happy for a remake of it, I'm going to talk about a remake I'm not happy for,
mm-hmm.
which is Rayman Legends Retold. I don't care. I mean, they can remake it. I just saw the announcement and I was like, why? It still looks so good. I think the only reason that makes sense to me is that it's not on the current generation of consoles. But it's like, at that point, you know, you've ported it so many times, like, okay, if you want to do like an HD version, then fine. But this is a quote unquote remake. Like they're redoing some of the graphics, like to slightly different style, even. I think it's mostly the characters look a little mm-hmm. bit different. And then they're adding some new levels and things. I really think they could have just done an HD-ish version or something if they wanted to. I wish they were doing a new one, but whatever. Anyway, back to the Summer Games Fest, the last thing I wanted to cover from that, mostly because I just played The Last Guardian finally. The creators of that have a new game that I guess was already announced. I haven't heard of
Maybe just like a teaser almost, because I do vaguely recall.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, okay. Vaguely.
And it's one of those things where they announced it like 5 years ago and then everybody forgot about it. Well, it's back. Gen Atlas. It's like a robot thing. And I'll say I wasn't really doing it for me either. And I think it's mostly because, like, from the Team Eco Studio, I always think of, like, nature and whether there are animals in it. I mean, Shadow of the Colossus and The Lost Guardian both had interesting animals. Eco didn't really. But there is, like, this sense of, you know, stillness and nature, and the fauna and flora are really interesting. And then it's like 180 and like, okay, now we're doing robots. So it doesn't really feel like something I want from them, but it could be interesting. I don't know. We'll see when it comes out, mm-hmm. I guess. And moving on to other Sony State of Play news, that's where we saw the Rayman Legends Retold announcement. But there was something from the Japanese creator Ikumi Nakamura, super cool lady. It was cool to see her show up.
Mm-hmm. So the game that was announced for this stream was Kamuri. I guess, is that how you would say it?
Yeah, Kamuri.
Okay. It's coming in 2027, so next year sometime, and it's just a new cool looking game. I thought it looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and I think we were both kind of joking. This is what it, Renatus would look like if it had more money in it.
You're getting confused with Kingdom Hearts 4, aren't you? Or were we also saying that about this?
No, I think we're saying about this as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I also thought that one
came up multiple times.
Yes. All right. Sorry, Renatus. It came up two times. Yeah. Oh, you're right. So, Kimmery was also in Tokyo, and that was the one with the, like, yokai kind of theme.
Yes.
Oh, and you, like, they were saying something like you will wear the... Something about wearing
something about
them.
You that get the
like,
abilities.
Yeah, you get the abilities by wearing them, and it was a little weird, but... Very stylish looking. And there was also kind of like a parkour element.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it looked fun. And I like that, at least from what we saw in a lot of these trailers, it feels like there is some amount of money being put into games that are not only sequels or mm-hmm. prequels or remakes or so on and so forth. Which I feel that kind of, you know, for many years now, it's just been kind of the small indie studios have done that, and they've done it extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like there was a time when somewhat larger studios would do it too, and then it stopped happening
mm-hmm.
as much as it had been before for a while. So, I don't know, this E3 period... I felt like there was a bit more of that this time around. And this game kind of feels that way to me. So I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
Me too.
I don't look forward to Kingdom Hearts 4.
Yeah. Not really. Me neither, really. At least not from what they showed. Which, yeah, was basically like, oh, it's Renatus. Sora's in Shibuya fighting a Heartless and... I don't know. It didn't look that great. It looks like a really early build or something. But I was like, this is what you're showing off? Okay.
Well, I mean, it's maybe I feel like, okay, me as a teenager, when I did play Kingdom Hearts 2 and was like, this is awesome. And then at the end of that, they showed like a little fake mm-hmm. thing, right? Or like mm-hmm, it was a Kingdom mm-hmm. Hearts 3 thing. Anyway, and it was like dark and mm-hmm, emo and mm-hmm. broody. And at the time, I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And so from that brain, teenage Marcus,
uh-huh.
the Kingdom Hearts 4 trailer, I could be like, oh, hell yeah. Now they're in Shibuya. They're in actual Japan.
Uh-huh.
Although I will say it looked kind of bland. So I don't know that I would have been so hell yeah. It could have been like nicer, like cooler. But anyway... But now, I'm like, no. What I think is cool about Kingdom Hearts is going to all the Disney worlds. The colorful, uh-huh, unique, uh-huh. fantastical, fun things that I remember from my childhood and like to explore in a different way.
Yeah.
And I suppose Kingdom Hearts 4 could still do that. It's just not what they showed. Or maybe all the Disney characters are now in Japan. I don't know.
Wow.
But... From that little tidbit, it just was not like, at this point in my life, that's not what I like about Kingdom Hearts. It is not the emo realism. It's, you know, the fun and silliness.
Yeah.
More, anyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What, I was just trying to think, like, what Disney stuff could they put in Kingdom Hearts that would make you excited?
Well, I mean, I didn't play the last Kingdom Hearts, so I don't know all that was even in that.
Mm.
Was, like, Big Hero 6 in that?
See, yeah, I don't know either. I know that they went to Toy Story yeah. World in that, and they might have gone to San Francisco, or I know at least Big Hero 6 has an element in that. They're like, what's his name? The big
robot?
The mushy robot, yeah. Anyway, he's a summon.
Okay.
But I think even maybe he was sort of present in the 4 trailer. I feel like I saw people mentioning it, like maybe his summon was slightly there or something. But yeah, so I think it's in it a little bit. If they did Turning Red, that would be cute. That'd be cool. I don't know, really. Oh. Yeah, there's a big kaiju or something in Turning Red, right? That would be really fun.
Yeah. Oh, here's what would do it for me. Three Amigos.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Or yeah, go to whatever, Mexico. Yeah. Going to Mexico.
Having Donald and Jose Carioca or whatever his name is and the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be cute. I don't know if they ever showed up, like, as a summon or as, like, a assist or something.
I mean, Donald is, like, a main character, sure. They should have something like that.
Yeah. I know they went to the Tangled World in 4.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not 4, 3. Gosh, I don't even know.
Oh my God, 4 isn't out yet.
I was thinking it would be funny if they started putting Duffy and Friends in.
Yeah.
You know, Disney Sea. Sora should go to Tokyo Disney Sea and meet Duffy.
There is a Disney Sea game, but I think that came out before Duffy existed.
Oh, yeah, probably. I think Duffy's fairly new in the pantheon.
Did they ever do Fantasia?
I don't think so. They should go to a Fantasia world.
That'd be cool.
Or like Ratatouille. I mean, that's just France. That's just France. Fantasia would be super cool, though, all the different areas in that. I mean, obviously, Chernabog was a boss. I think he's the boss at the end of 1, I remember.
Oh.
I mean, to fight him. And he's in it a bit, but as in the whole world, like going to the Fantasia world would be fun. Yeah. Lots more cool Disney stuff they could do,
Hunchback.
For sure. I think they did have Hunchback, yeah. In one of them. Maybe Dream Drop Distance, the 3DS one. But yes. Yeah, you know that's a fave of mine.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, well, moving along. More Sony State of Play things. We have a release date for Silent Hill Townfall. It's coming out September 24th. And they showed more gameplay / mood stuff. I hear that it's pretty light on combat, so more walking around the town, finding out secrets, maybe doing some puzzles.
That's fine with me. I don't need combat.
Yeah.
I dislike combat.
Yeah. I think it looks cool. Are you feeling like you're looking forward to playing it, or just kind of like, well, I'll pick it up because of Silent Hill?
I don't know that it's really appealing to me presently, but yeah, I'll still get it and watch it if I don't end up playing it. So, you know, it's gonna happen.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like at this point it's like there's so much Silent Hill coming at me. I'm like, I don't know. <That's> I can take all of it.
What a problem to have, right? All of a sudden you have too much Silent Hill.
Yes. So rare.
We still haven't watched the movie, the Silent Hill 2 movie.
Yeah.
Everyone said it's horrible.
And you haven't seen any of the movies, or did you see Silent Hill?
We watched the first one together.
We did?
Yeah, in the past year or two. You look so blank.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember at all. Yeah, we watched it.
Okay, well, we can at some point watch Silent Hill Revelations, which is bad. And then we can watch this one.
Which is supposedly also bad. Yes. Cool. Looking forward to it. And then something that I think took both of us by surprise, especially me, because I like have no history with the series at all. We were both pretty into the God of War Lafay.
Something like that, yeah.
Reveal. So this is a pretty meaty reveal. It was like 30 minutes, wasn't it? Or something, maybe 20.
Well, I don't know how long it was, but it was sizable.
Yeah, like a video that showed some portion of the game. And it's like, starts off with Kratos and his son laying his wife to rest. I guess they call her Faye, right? And what Faye is her full, real, legal name. I don't know. But she dies, I guess. See, I don't know anything about God of War. I just know that Kratos is angry because his wife is dead. And you actually then are transported to whatever the afterlife or wherever she is, her soul spirit is in, and then kind of see from her point of view. And it has some really cool mythical themes that seem to be like Egyptian and maybe Southeast Asian influence. And she runs into a talking blob cube and a talking sword, mm-hmm. or maybe the ribbon on the sword is talking. And it's like a lot of weird, silly stuff that I'm really into. I think you were into it too.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So I don't really know what's going on. You can speak a little bit to God of War, right? Like, you like the original games, didn't you?
Yes. So when, okay, I'm going to tell a little story.
Okay.
What?
I'm getting ready to listen. I'm putting my hand and my head in my hands, like I'm ready to listen to the story. Okay.
Yeah. So I cannot off the top of my head remember if it was God of War 1 or God of War 2. But I once upon a time was a bad little pirate child and pirated the game. Yes. And played it on my PS2. And so, and again, I don't remember which one it was, one or two, probably one. But anyway, it was one of the rare PS2 games that was like a dual layer disc, which means that it had like extra capacity compared to a regular DVD.
Oh.
So my DVD burner could not do that. So interestingly, I was able to play half the game about, and then it just faded to black, and that was it. And I was like, okay, well, now I know, like, because I was unclear, like, how would this even work? Would the game play at all if I only have half the data?
Mm-hmm.
And it did. It played half the game. So I was like, oh my God, but this game is so good. So, like, that day I went out and bought it.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay.
So that's why I told the story, because I made it right.
A happy ending to the pirate story. By purchasing story. The game. So did you ever finish it?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So
this is
the era when
you finish games.
Yes. I loved God of War 1 and 2 a lot. They were great games for me at the time. Very hyper-masculine, stupid, gory, you know, perfect.
Mm-hmm. Oh, perfection. Yeah.
So I really liked them then, and God of War 3, also fine. Past that, I kind of lost interest. I did not play the newer God of Wars with his son. I'm like, I do not care about him being a father. I don't care about any of this. Leave me alone. I'm done with this series.
Mm-hmm.
But always in the back of my mind, remembering all the good times I had with the old ones. And so I don't pay attention to gaming news that much anymore, especially like AAA news, like whatever. So if there were rumors or anything about this new God of War game, I had no knowledge of it. So when the trailer went on and it was like, okay, there's Kratos and his son, and I'm like, whatever. And then it's like, oh, but actually you're the wife. Then I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
Uh-huh.
And it feels bad to say it, but I thought it was a joke, or it was like at the end of it, you'll see, okay, you're Kratos again.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is just a little story beat to kind of get you in the mood. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, we're Kratos again.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly cannot believe that this is a real game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad to say that, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because God of War, again, is the series which in my teenage years was about gore and, you know, masculinity and stupid shit, is like, now we're going to take this esteemed masculine, violent franchise, and it's still fucking violent, but now you've got a woman as the lead. I'm like, I'm just shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it, but I'm shocked.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. And, you know, this probably could say something to a lot of things. Maybe we won't dissect it too much, but I like that instead of, you know, pulling like a Stellar Blade and making it like hyper feminine, sexualized, you know, it's like she's just a warrior mom, you know, like she's pretty nondescript in her attire and like as functional, and she's not, it kind of reminds me of like the Tomb Raider rebrand they had a while back where it was like, we're going to have a realistic Lara Croft. I'm using air quotes. And
Well, hopefully she, LaFey doesn't die like Lara Croft dies in the new games.
True, Oh, dear. I don't know. Like, obviously, we can't talk anything to the actual gameplay or what happens in the story or anything. I mean, she literally is dead, right? So, you know, you still have the fridged wife situation that makes Kratos angry in the first place, right? But something interesting is going on narratively with her being in this, like, purgatory or, like, god liminal space or something. So I'm very interested. I hate to think about the backlash that this is probably getting, and I haven't really looked into it, but I have seen a few, like, people talking heads type of, like, content where people are reporting on the fact that some fans are angry for probably obvious reasons, but some of it's being like, well, the series is called God of War, and so why would you focus it on his wife? She's not the God of War, you know, and all these other reasons. Like, we don't want to play a woman, we want to play as Kratos, right? But we'll be here and we'll be happy.
Yeah. I'll get it.
Yeah.
I want to play. It's the first time I've wanted to play a God of War in years.
Yeah. I think it's very cool. And I, even after we watched the video and, like, kind of sat on it, I was like, there's got to be, it's going to be a Metal Gear Solid 2 thing where they, like, pull a 180 somehow. Like, the game comes out and it's not actually about her. But then I read an interview and the, like, someone involved in the game was like, we really wanted to make a game about her and feature her. So I don't know, maybe they're doing a long con, but it just would seem like pretty extreme to name it after her and have it not be about her, right?
The way that it's got her name in the title makes me assume it really is legitimate. Again, it sucks that we have to, like, think it's not so much, but it's just like, this is the gaming industry, and when you have massive AAA titles, they don't tend to be that risky or creative or do something like this. And, or, for example, you know, back in the day when Assassin's Creed was very popular, they had a woman protagonist, but it wasn't the mainline games. It was on the Vita. You know, and that's how they got away with it, I think. And in their minds, they felt that if it was a spin-off game, that they could do that. And maybe this is a spin-off. I don't know, but it's not presented that way anyway. It's presented as, you know, it's a big game. They ended their show with it for 20 minutes or however long.
Yeah,
it was.
That's right.
It's very serious. So
yeah, it's a big deal.
It's just like, it's wild. Yeah. But I'm happy. It's just like, I don't know. It's just shocking to me.
Yeah, it's sad that we're shocked, but, you know, I feel sad that that's our reaction, but it's exciting, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And I hope it is weird. Like, I hope it continues to be weird, like with the weird cube thing. I hope it's weird in other ways too, because that is very strange. That alone, I like that the, you know, the gods or demons or whatever they are all there, and they seem to be from different mythologies or different things. I like that they are talking and cool. It's like neat. It's a fun idea, I think.
So. Yeah, it seems like it will be fun and interesting, and just a lot of, like, big budget AAA stuff isn't quirky, you know? Like, you might have a certain type of humor, like, literally the only thing I can think of is this stupid Rick and Morty humor guy, and that, I don't know, but that's, like, the type of humor I think of. Like, a very specific type of humor is allowed, but just being, like, kind of weird and offbeat and silly in a certain way isn't really, it doesn't seem to have a place in these big budget games, at least currently. So the fact that, like, there's this talking blob cube, and actually when she's fighting, he's there, like, bouncing into the enemies with her is, like, very funny to me. But it just seems so odd. Like, I'm like, what's going on? What, did they have some kind of changeover in staff or something weird happening? Or they're like, we really need to change up God of War because it's losing its appeal. And we're going to try something really weird to get the Gen Zers to play, or I have no idea what they're thinking, but I like it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you mentioning the PS Vita made me realize that we forgot a very important bit of life news.
Okay.
That I need to share.
Okay.
That we are now proud parents of a PlayStation Portal device. Oh,
yeah. Yes.
The newest in handheld PlayStation gaming. This is a weird story. So, like, we kind of, I don't know if we joked about having one, but we were like, oh, you know, we should be the perfect market for this, but it's just not what we want. And then I think it was late last year, they finally added the ability. So previously the device was like only streaming from your console that you already own. So you own the PS5, you can stream your games from your PS5 to your PlayStation Portal.
In your house.
In your house. That was something you could already do, and you could do it outside of your house, right? It with your like phone, if you had this PlayStation Connect app, or on your iPad, or on a TV with the app downloaded, and as long as you connected the PS5 and authenticated it, you could then stream the game so wherever you had that app installed. So mm-hmm. I'd done that before, like in the bedroom, I would be playing from the PS5 that's all the way across the house, and that worked fine, but it's like, why have a dedicated device for that? It doesn't make sense. But then they finally added the option to stream directly to the portal outside of your home, and you could do cloud streaming games that you don't necessarily own through the PS Plus subscription.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it a little bit more appealing, but still not quite what I want. You know, it's not a dedicated handheld device. And I think it was always kind of too expensive. It was like starting at, I think, like $199 originally.
I think it was not quite that expensive. Oh, really? Maybe $160, $170.
Okay. But now it's, they bumped it up in price.
Over $200.
Recently. Yeah. Yes. So I think, I swear it's like up to $250 now. Because of all the increases and everything. But we...
Oh, yeah. The introductory price, according to Wikipedia, was $199.
Okay. So I was right. Thank you. Thank you for affirming me. It's okay. Well, $199 for just, especially at the beginning, just the thing that streams your games inside your house is wild. But we kind of on a whim decided to check out this new, like, not new... as in new to the world, new to us, discount store. And they randomly had some electronics behind their counter, and I spied a PlayStation Portal there alongside a PSVR 2 and, you know, some other stuff. Like, I think they had a fancy keyboard, and I think they just get random stock for places that can't be sold for whatever reason. Like, the box might have a scratch in it, or someone returned it, or something like that. But this PS Portal was pretty heavily discounted. And then on top of the discount, there was an additional 15% off for all of the electronics they had there. So it came like well below the original price. I think mm-hmm. it was under $150
yeah.
new for it. But I think it just has a scratch in the box. So on a whim, we got it. Brought it home. Fiddled around with it a bit. And then... also on a whim, saw that the PlayStation Plus is heavily discounted because it was in the middle of all this E3 stuff, not mm-hmm. E3 stream stuff. And you could get a year of the highest level of PS Plus for something like 60% off, which worked out, I think, to be $100. So that means you can... so that... I haven't been subscribed to PS Plus for a while. So when they started changing up all the tiers, I already wasn't subscribed anymore because I don't even play like Monster Hunter Online. But they have the three tiers, and the most basic one is like what I used to have, where you just get the monthly PS Plus games and you get to do your cloud saves and you get to play games online. But now they've added all that stuff where, you know, in the middle tier, you get to stream the Ubisoft games catalog. And then in the highest tier, you get to stream, you know, select PS5 games. And you also get the classics, the PlayStation one and two classics and then other stuff. And I don't know. I definitely can't go over everything that it has, but it's got a lot of stuff. Like, so if you want to play God of War Ragnarok, you could literally just stream it to the PS Portal. Like, you don't even have to download it. And so I think that's appealing because, one, you can just try a bunch of stuff, but two, like, the PS5, our current one, is pretty full on its hard drive, so it's not like you have to delete something to make room and then wait for something to download. Like, we tried out a few stuff, like Spider-Man...
Miles Morales.
Yeah, Miles Morales, that one. Just streaming it, and, you know, it takes probably less than a minute to get ready. It, like, starts preparing it, and then it boots up, and it felt really smooth and it looked nice, and I played it on the Portal. And you can also use all of this on the PS5 because we've got the subscription now. You could do the streaming on the PS5 too. But yeah, I think it makes the PlayStation Portal very fun. Like, I couldn't imagine just getting that and then having the subscription. It could be a pretty cool thing to have. Maybe not for full price, but it's a neat idea. So now I'm more into it a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's fun. And, you know, for someone who, if they didn't have a PS5 and they maybe prefer handheld gaming or portable gaming, I think that this would be a really good thing at this point.
Yeah.
Now with all the added functionality.
Yeah, for sure. It's so a little weird, like, just using it. It's, like, a bit confusing because it's either, when you boot it up, you're, like, either you can connect to the PS5 or you can do the streaming, and so it's like you have to pick which one you want to do, and then it sort of brings you through that tunnel or whatever tunnel of functionality. But even though it's not as streamlined and cute and fun as the Vita, I'm still happy to have a new PlayStation handheld-ish type thing. And it feels pretty nice. Like, it's it literally feels like they just took a PS5 controller and split it in half and put a screen in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's a little on the side, but I can't believe we forgot to mention it. So there you have it. Moving on, I guess we'll quickly go through some more of the streaming announcements. I know you thought Bad Magpie in the Microsoft stream looked really cute.
Yeah.
It's just a cute game. Yeah. Cute indie-ish game, right?
Just in the vein of, you know, Untitled Goose Game, where you got a little bird that's rude.
Being
or
rude.
Destructive.
Yeah.
Although it seems to have a bit more going on to it. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, more kind of gameplay.
Yeah. It just seemed cool. I don't know. It just looked cool.
Yeah.
Or fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Was there anything in the Nintendo Direct other than Kingdom Hearts 4 you wanted to mention?
I don't remember anything. So.
I honestly don't really either. Aside from the Zelda Ocarina of Time remake announcement at the very end. And, you know, after the fact.
Teaser.
Yeah, that was mostly a teaser. There was barely anything. And it's funny because after the fact I saw that, I guess it had already been leaked.
Something to that effect.
I didn't see the leak, so it was a surprise to me. But I still haven't played the original, so I don't really have any strong feelings about it. It's really interesting to see people get so worked up over like 2 seconds of seeing Link lying on a bed and they're like, oh, it looks like garbage, or, you know, having any kind of opinion about it really is hard at this stage. So I don't know. Yeah. Then finally, our last bit of news for this episode is the Steam Machine just came out with its price and the signups for ordering.
Well, so, not for ordering.
Isn't the sign-ups to order it?
Well,
so
the
you're sign-up to potentially order
yes.
it. There we go. You know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so yes. The Steam Machines were announced by Valve a while ago as, like, this is coming. Well, technically, okay, way a while ago, Valve had, like, the Steam Machine Initiative, which was, like, they would certify PCs as being, like, Steam compatible or something. And it was, like, living room computers and various manufacturers could make them.
Oh.
So that's not what this is. They're just reusing that name, Steam Machine. This is actually, Valve is putting together a small form factor computer, and you can buy it from them. That's what this Steam Machine is. So Steam Machine, as it is now, they finally revealed the price. That was the last thing, aside from the fact that we still, I don't think, know the exact release date. Maybe we do. But the price was the last thing that they had kept, like, quiet about. Obviously, because of all the things going on with supply chain and the cost of computer components skyrocketing because AI's, you know, data centers are eating everything up. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, I'm sure they wanted to get the best price as possible with the market as it is today. So they finally revealed it. And the lowest tier model, if you just want to get a Steam Machine with the 512 gigabyte hard drive, that is $1,049. And that is the cheapest model. You can also get them bundled with the new Steam controller, which is itself, I think, normally like $100 or so. So it goes up from there. And the main difference is whether you bundle it with a controller or not. And if you get it with a larger, you know, more gigabytes, I think up to 2 terabytes is the max. So that's it. The device is shaped like a cube. So like a slightly larger GameCube in size. And it's just a little black box that you can put in your living room and play games on. It runs SteamOS just like the Steam Deck. So from my opinion, then that means it'll have all the same issues that the Steam Deck has, at least the ones that I experience, which is where all of the games I want to play never work. because I like obscure, weird things I don't know. And so, you know, if you like more popular games, you'll probably be fine. I just always have problems with the Steam Deck, so I am not super chasing the Steam Machine because it would just have the same issues. Because it's SteamOS, it's not Windows, so on and so forth.
Right.
So the thing about this is there are not orders open right now. And in fact, you cannot pre-order it either. It is kind of like what they did for the Steam Deck, where you would sign up to say like you're interested. Although I think when you did that, you had to put down $5 deposit.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And
that.
It was kind of like whatever order you were able to click that button and get in was the order of how they would ship out those Steam Decks eventually. So it was awful because, of course, the site went down and you couldn't get it. You know, when I tried to order my Steam Deck for the first time, it was like, I'm here in time, before time. And then the site was just dying and I couldn't complete the process. This is a little different, where now the kind of mark your interest window is right now until June 25th. Anytime from now until then, you can go on Steam's Steam Machine page and mark your interest in one or up to all 4 of the different models. Say, like, I would be interested in buying any of these or whatever. And no payment is due for this marking of interest. And also, there is no order. So even if you were the first person to click that, it doesn't matter. If you're the last person who clicks it on June 25th, it doesn't matter. What they're going to do is, once the time period where you can do this ends, they're going to randomize everyone's interest forms, and then that will become the order in which they start to sell them to you. So I think that's relatively fair. I appreciate that it's better than what they did with the Steam Deck. So that's good. They're learning. And for your ability to be able to order one of these, you have to have a Steam account in good standing, meaning like you haven't caught cheating in like online multiplayer games or whatever. And also you have to have purchased something on the account prior, I think, to April 27th. I think this was what they said. So basically you can't make an account now and buy this, which is good in a sense to stop scalpers, but probably a bunch of scalpers made Steam accounts in order to buy Steam Decks. So
right.
Maybe they would have already done whatever things were necessary. Either way, it's not bad. I don't think I'm going to get it, but it's an option there for people who want it.
Phew. I was going to say, you feel like you need one, but you answered that question. I'm glad.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we do.
Watch out.
Oh, no.
You never know what could happen with my brain, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're going to get some terrible idea about what you could do with it or something. Let's move on before he gets any ideas.
Yes.
Anyway, and then we're going to talk about what we've been watching and playing. Just a really quick update on my end for the Prince of Persia 2008 version that I'm playing. I wanted to complain. They did one of these things where it's like, okay, you've gone through all the main areas. There are like kind of four main areas with different sections that you go to. And the whole thing is that you have to basically purify them. And then once you purify them of the darkness, they get all nice and green and lush. And then a bunch of these little orbs appear. And you need to collect those orbs for the lady to get her power-ups or something. And there are like locks in place where it says, you know, you have to get so many orbs in order to go to the next area. And so far, it was kind of natural that I would get enough orbs to go without going out of my way to collect them. I then got to the point where they said, oh, you need another 100 orbs to do more of the game. So I literally had to go back to all the different areas and collect a ton of these dumb things. And it reminded me that I hate when games put arbitrary stuff like that in place, because it definitely seems like they're like, we didn't want to make more areas or find something else for you to do, so we're just going to put this little lock in place so you have to spend all this time in the areas, make sure that, you know, you collect these, and then you can move on. So it just seems very arbitrary way of, like, stretching out the time of the game, and I don't like it.
I don't like it either, but I think it was, like, especially common in, like, the 360 era, where there was a lot of games coming out where they're fun, but it was like, oh, they would be too short if so the developers had to come up with some way that ends up being annoying to extend the length. And this seems to be what that is. It's purely there to make the game last 9 hours instead of 5 hours.
Yeah, it could have very well just been like some executive was like, this can't be a 5-hour game. You need to pad it up a bit, you know. But, yeah, unfortunately, not a huge fan of that. But I'm trying to chip away at it. That did take a little bit of the air out of my steam. That's not it.
Wind out of my sails.
Yes, it took a little bit of the wind out of my sails with that game. But I do want to complete it because I think I'm probably over halfway now. Yes. I beat my first, like, big boss. That's the other thing is, I think I kind of like the game in that it's sort of contained. Like, you're not going all over this big world and encountering all these different characters and things. It's, like, very much in this relatively small space. It's, like, one, like, country. And there are different, it's, like, the one kingdom, and they've got different realms of the kingdom. And each realm sort of has its one bad guy. And those bad guys kind of keep coming back and you have to fight them a couple times. And then there seems to be a point where you defeat them and then you've got to do that for all four of them. So I did defeat my first one. So maybe I'm 3/4 of the way through. I don't know. Anyway, I feel like I'm getting towards the end. So I would like to finish it at this point, but that was just annoying.
Yeah.
Then finally, we have watched a few things. I guess I'll start with my shame, which is it's not that the fact that we watched this is shameful. It's kind of the story behind it, which is a bit silly. But we watched this documentary called Big Girls Wanted, which was just released a couple of weeks ago through what's the TV channel? ID.
IB is a game.
Yeah, ID. Does that stand for something?
Investigation Discovery or something like that.
Okay, there you go. Investigation Discovery, which we were able to watch through Sling.
Yes.
And then it's also on HBO. Like they've got some kind of relationship. So it aired on ID and then also went up on HBO. And it's a three-part documentary, I guess docu-series officially, since it had episodes, about a, like, kind of like a, I guess, I'm not sure if it's officially known as this, but it seems like it's meant to be like a content house for obese women or fat women who go live with this guy who has his house in Las Vegas. And he is a self-proclaimed lover of large women. He likes women over 500 pounds. He says this himself. And he wanted to create a place for women to come live and feel comfortable, is what he says. You know, feel comfortable in their bodies, feel loved and supported, all that. But it's like...
But he's a man.
Yeah, but he's a man.
And that's all you need to say.
Yeah, you're right. Basically, you can stop there. If it were a woman doing this, out of the goodness of her heart, because she wants to support fellow women, then we would have a different story here. But he's a POS. And there's a lot of allegations and horrible stuff that happened there. I should say also the house is named Paradise. It's spelled P-E-A-R, a dice. So I guess they're on TikTok and all these social media, maybe primarily TikTok. But that stuff doesn't really matter. You can watch it if you're interested. It's a, you know, kind of sad, distressing narrative. You know, some pretty messed up stuff happens there. My reason for being interested in it is kind of weird, and that was what I was joking about earlier, was my shame, because I have a hobby of listening to reaction channels on YouTube, primarily when I'm puttering around the house during the day, and I listen to a lot of garbage. It's kind of like, you know, your soap opera, or, you know, someone listening to Desperate Housewives, or, you know, not Real Housewives. I always do that. You know, some garbage sitcom or reality TV or something like that. But so I listen to people who talk about, like, internet drama and, you know, might be stuff going on TikTok, or, what, you know, some content creator expose themselves for being an idiot for, I don't know, or small business drama, just all kinds of silly stuff. It's usually pretty silly, but some of it can get a little darker depending on the, you know, person, subject matter. But long story short, one of the people that I like to watch does commentary on a certain YouTube creator who has a lot of questionable history, especially because she lies about things and just is a bit of a mess. But she was featured in the trailer for the documentary saying something that sort of became like a memeable soundbite related to the documentary. And the whole community of people who sort of watch what she's up to were really wondering what she was doing in the documentary, because she's never been to this house. She's never been to Paradise House before. And everyone figured she was brought on as a person who is knowledgeable about certain type of fetish community that this house is related to. But she went on this big, almost like PR campaign for herself leading up to the documentary being released, where she was like, I have a whole sub story in this documentary and I have a really important role and this and that. And so it was almost like this whole you know, little community of people who watch this person on the internet were like waiting to see exactly what her role was, because it's just kind of unbelievable that she thought that she had this big part in it. So I really want to sit down and watch it because of that. I want to see how this person that I've sort of been following a little bit over the past, you know, 6 months or so, how she was involved and what actually was going to happen. So it felt like a little event almost. Like everyone in this community was like, okay, let's sit down and see what she's got to do with all of this. And you timed it, I think. You timed the amount of time that she was actually on screen in the three episodes. So the whole thing totaled to like a couple of hours long, right? And then she was in it for less than 2 minutes
yeah.
overall. Yeah. yeah. And she talked about what we thought she would talk about, which was her relation to this fetish community and basically serving as a person to give a definition of it. So, you know, anytime you watch a documentary, they have different voices come in, and it's not always people directly related to the thing. You might have like a subject matter expert, or they also brought in Tess Holliday, who's a very well-known fat activist and model, or they had a, I think it was like a sex scholar or something.
Something.
Yeah. And I thought, that's cool. I wish I did that. Mm-hmm. I want to have a PhD in sexology, you know? So yeah, so she really didn't have anything to do with it, but it was quite amusing to kind of watch through from that perspective to see how much this person was actually involved, because you definitely can see how she was not viewing this as a important contribution on her part to a difficult subject matter or a story that needed to be told from the part of the victims, but she was viewing it as an opportunity for herself to get more fame or something. It was all very odd. Anyway, it was probably nobody cared about my side story about this, but that was Big Girls Wanted and why we watched it. Mm-hmm. We've also been watching a couple of Pride related things on Criterion. You resubscribed, right?
Yeah, and other places too, but yeah.
I thought they were both on there, but maybe not.
No, not okay. both.
Excuse me.
It's okay.
Anyway, but you resubbed to Criterion yeah. channel for Pride Month specifically, right? Because you like how they curate stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see. From Criterion, we watched The Watermelon Woman, which is a movie that I've wanted to watch for a good while now. And I had really no idea what it was about, to be honest. It's just like something that I've been wanting to watch. It's on my list of, like, you know, there's only so many well-regarded LGBTQ movies that, like, are from, you know, before the 2000s, let's say. Mm-hmm. There's not a big list. So it's been on my list.
The tiny list.
Mm-hmm. But it was pretty fun. It's kind of like, I don't know, a little bit meta, because the movie is about the protagonist who wants to be a filmmaker and is really obsessed with finding out more about this basically unknown actress from the early days of cinema, a rare, you know, African-American woman who was in these multiple roles. And so she really wants to find out more about this actress. And she's also kind of living her life, working at a video rental store, you know, dating and all of these things. All the while she's kind of researching for making a documentary about the actress. And so we see that research stuff happening, like going to a archive and talking to people. And then we even see at the end, basically, kind of the documentary. And a thing, it's fun because the way it's presented is like very realistic. And it's like, okay, yeah, I don't know who this actress is, but this is all like is very believable in a way, could very much be real. But ultimately, like, the actress that she's researching is not real in like actual Hollywood or anything. But, you know, the idea, the sentiment is there, and it could be real. It's just presented in a really neat way. I really liked it. I thought it was fun, a fun film. And so I'm glad we watched it. I haven't actually seen a ton of like lesbian focused movies, so it's fun mm-hmm. for that as well.
Yeah, I like that. It almost felt like it was a proto, like, YouTube, what do you call it? Essay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking. Yes. Video essay. It had very much that video essay style to it, mm-hmm. where the filmmaker was talking to the camera about, like, guess what I found out about today? did you know this? You know, just very much that style. So that was fun. And I liked the video rental store scenes were very fun. Just for having that, you know, memory of what rental stores were like, but also like the kind of banter between the characters that was happening there, and like how they rented a porn video and then put it on a customer account, and then there was this whole thing, like it was their way of getting free videos by basically checking it out before the customer came in, and it was a whole debacle. Very silly. So there was some humorous moments to it, like as you mentioned, the archive was very silly, like, you know, lesbian archive, and like the type of,
it was like CLIT, I think. That's the name of the archive.
That was the acronym. And the woman that
Center
was...
for Lesbians and Technology or something.
And the woman who worked there was like really pedantic in a way that was like, I can see this, you know. Yes. But also, like, kind of like raw and realistic in the way that things don't happen neatly, like, as you know, part of the film was she has this relationship with a white woman, and it's kind of revealed that I'm not sure what the term is, like, you know, if you're into Asians it's yellow fever, but you know, so it's revealed that she sort of has a thing for black people, right? And then how that is woven into the research that the filmmaker is doing, where the filmmaker speaks with someone and they basically say, like, don't center the story of this actress that you're featuring on her relationship with a white woman in cinema, because that's diminishing her, like, accomplishments. And then you as a viewer kind of connected, and like, clearly you're meant to connect it with what the filmmaker is going through in her own life, but it just is sort of this thing that naturally happens, and then that the woman that she's dating is gone and we never see her again, and they don't, it's not like some confrontation or like any big like blowout breakup or anything, it's just like we don't see her anymore, and the film continues on, but you can kind of think about how the filmmaker may have internalized all that stuff or been like getting like thinking about it, and it makes you think about it, and I thought that was interesting. So I recommend it. I liked it.
Yeah. And then I did, this just reminded me, because the Pride watching, we watched something on Tubi, which is not on this list. Butch Camp.
Oh my God. I forgot about Butch Camp.
Yeah. So Butch Camp is a 1996 movie, which I honestly had never heard of before. And I don't know how that's possible. Maybe because people don't like it. And so they don't recommend it. I'm not sure. But it's basically a movie about this man who is gay, and he kind of gets stepped on in his work, and he does not have a lover or a romantic partner or anything. He's just kind of alone, and he thinks that the way he can move up in life is to attend Butch Camp, which is kind of like this place where gay men can go if they want to be, quote, butched up by a lesbian who, like, tells them how to become manly men and also fight against, like, heterosexuals.
Like, homophobia, basically. Like, you know, how to protect yourself if you're attacked. So they, it's like boot camp for sissy men or something.
Although I wouldn't say he's, like, a, quote, sissy. He's just a nerd.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird. I was expecting, like, really effeminate in a, you know, different sort of way. But then it was like, oh, he's just really nerdy. And that's why he can't stand up for himself, because he's a nerd. Which was an interesting take on it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's all right. There's, like, a love triangle between him and this couple that he meets, who, when he meets them, they appear to be a straight or heterosexual couple. There's more going on there. And then just, you know, humorous interludes, stupid stuff. But overall, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was, like, dumb fun. So that's on Tubi if anyone wants to watch it. But also on Tubi is the movie But I'm a Cheerleader. And that movie is, like, so good. So if I had to recommend anything that you could watch for free for Pride Month, it would be But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah, that one's fun.
It's good-hearted. It has a nice ending. It's not, like, you know, sad. It's just fun.
Yeah. I should note, though, Butch Camp wouldn't have a sad ending either. It was good.
No, like, I know, but ending. Often when you think about this type of movie, often a lot of the endings are not positive.
Yeah. So it's good to know when they are. Mm-hmm.
Yes, but between the two, obviously, one is better.
Obviously. There's a reason why we haven't heard about Butch Camp, apparently.
Maybe, yeah. And then the other movie we watched, which was on Canopy, which is the, if you have a library card, you may have access to Canopy, was a documentary called Raw, Uncut Video. I said it like that because that's how it's written. Each word is punctuated by an exclamation point. So this is a documentary about the movie studio, whatever you would want to call them, Palm Drive Video. And they were creating different fetish videos in the 90s. And I had never heard of them before, but I thought it was an interesting topic, and so I decided to watch it. And it was cool. It was basically about these two men, a couple, who decided to get into making videos and selling the VHSs, you know, through mail and so on and so forth. But kind of their drive for making these fetish videos was because, you know, they were living through the AIDS crisis. And when everyone in the gay community was fearful of having sex or even, you know, being with other people, because, you know, for a lot of it, it was unclear what exactly causes you to transmit AIDS. There was a lot of misinformation out there. So a lot of fear for those queer men, for others in the LGBTQ community who were like, well, what are we supposed to do if we can't have sex? And so these directors or these film creators were like, they saw an idea that they had for this where they could make video content, because if you're watching a video, you're not with anybody. Nothing is going to happen to you, per se. And also, beyond just having it as a video, the content that they shot was not typical pornography either. It was not two people having sexual intercourse. Some of it, or a lot of it, was like one person is being filmed. And so from that perspective, the actor is also protected because they're not having any sexual activity with another person. They're just there with themselves. Or if there's another person there, they're not doing anything explicitly. There's no penetration or other things happening. It's like maybe they slap you or something. But so their whole thing was this type of video, and where they would let kind of their actors go with whatever kind of fetishes or interests that they wanted, which I don't know that other people were heavily doing at the time. So they really catered to a market that didn't have a lot of outlets. So they got interest that way. And just in general, by having a video that you could, you know, just order it and then, you know, enjoy it at your own home. So I thought it was really cool, a really great documentary. Opened my eyes to this thing that I never had known about. Palm Drive Video, never knew who they were, but I thought it was great. I liked the people that they got to talk about it. A lot of the actors seemed to have really enjoyed their time there. There was a really fun part where one of the actors' moms was also, like, interviewed. And she just was, like, so awesome. Like, so cool and, like, with, like, for everything that the studio did, that her son did. And she's like, yeah, you're awesome, Mom. This is great.
Yeah, that was really sweet. And I've noticed that, so the filmmakers were gay, and perhaps you could assume that a lot of their clientele was gay, though they didn't necessarily explicitly make all of their films for a gay audience. Like, anyone could enjoy it because, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, there was just one person in it. But that man with his mom, he said that he was straight, mm-hmm. and that he, I don't know if he used the word shame, but he may be embarrassed, or like he still was a little bit embarrassed about it. And I remember his mom was like, how many of your straight friends can say that they did something like this? And he's like, well, none. And she was just like so into it and so supportive. It was really cute. Really, mm-hmm. really cute. Yeah. But yeah, I really liked it too. I thought it was really fascinating. And I learned about that magazine too. Was it Drummer?
Yes.
That, so the videographer used to do photography, yes. for the Drummer, which I think was a, what was it, specific leather fetish magazine? Yeah. So him and his partner, who I can't remember if they met through the magazine or just through that scene, but they're clearly into more niche fetish culture themselves. So I don't think, well, obviously the AIDS epidemic was a big part of it, but I think they also wanted to just like make what they wanted, mm-hmm. to see, right? And that wasn't happening. Like, they, there was a little, like, an aside towards the beginning of, like, kind of how, like, idealized and sterilized the porn had been up till then with, like, men. And there weren't a lot of, like, different types of bodies of, like, hairy men, or, like, what you would consider a bear now, or, like, daddies and things. Like, the previously it was all, like, these really, like, immaculate model type people featured in the porn. So it was cool to see them. It was also really sweet because they basically open with the little story of how they got to know each other. And then they interviewed all these different people talking about how they were basically like the ideal couple, and like that you could feel like their love for each other, and that they were the ultimate partnership. And they did this whole thing themselves, the two of them together. They made, mm-hmm. this company, and people would talk about how, you know, they're the type of people who you see them go through life and their bond gets stronger, and just like so wholesome. Like, and it's so funny to say wholesome in the context of like, if you watch this, some of the fetish content they're making, because I think certainly mainstream folks wouldn't consider it wholesome, mm-hmm. but it, yeah, I, yeah. think it just really attests to the fact that like there's really, there's a lot of good in niche communities and kind of the oddballs of the world, you know, like they're doing something that most people will, a lot of people would look at and think is a little messed up. Like, I was going to say that one of the aspects that I actually thought was kind of fun about the documentary, like, you should know that it's very, pretty X-rated.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you know, penetration between two people happening, but you see basically everything, mm-hmm. Short of actual fecal matter.
Yeah, maybe. You don't see that.
You don't.
You do see a bit of vomit.
Yeah.
You do see urine.
I did not see the vomit because I basically saw the warning signs and you were like, "And get out." And I was like, no. And I ran because I didn't want to see it. But yes, yeah, so they really go extreme. Like, there's drinking of urine, or what we can assume, maybe they swapped it out, but, mm-hmm. I don't think there was a cut there.
Yeah.
Like, you see him urinate and then drink it out of the cup. And then, you know, there's the vomit one, which, what was that? Their like most infamous one. And it's called Hot Lunch, I think, is the vomit one.
Maybe.
I think it was called Hot Lunch.
Yeah.
And all kinds of interesting things. Like, I think the movie opens with a man humping some mud. Like, he's, mm-hmm. butt naked and, you know,
face down in the giant thing of mud.
And we actually recently learned that the fetish for like being really dirty like this is called gunge.
Yes.
So there you go. That's your word of the day, is gunge. So there was some gunge content in there. Like some stuff where someone was licking like a hose, not a hose, it was like a tube that you use in like, you know, a warehouse. Just a lot of very interesting stuff that, you know, you don't see a lot, but it's very explicit. So that's, you know, something to keep in mind. Don't watch with any kids around. But then just the whole context of it was just so fascinating and nice. Like everybody, there was no like, and granted, we don't know the whole story, so maybe there's some scandal in there somewhere. But in the presentation of it, like to contrast, you know, with, well, we didn't mention that we watched this, but we did watch a documentary about America's
Next Top Model
and all that. And like you hear the story of the production of that and all these scandals and all these horrible things going on. And this is like, okay, there's just these two wholesome guys and they love each other and they're making weird fetish porn together, weird and being affectionate with that. And all the people that participated, at least in the opening years, were really into it. They came in and they performed whatever fetish content they wanted to do. They like read some letters from people basically saying like they were honored to be featured and please invite me back anytime. You don't need to pay me. Like they just wanted to do it and they were having fun. And they do talk about like later on, as the actors kind of got more, some actors got more well known and then they wanted to raise their rates and then they got more like picky. So it was clear that like at a certain point, the people who wanted to participate wanted to do it for the money or for the, as a job, not as a, like a fan or, you know, a participant themselves. So there clearly was some sort of, what's the word, downturn eventually, but like there was a lot of good stuff going on and there wasn't anyone that they interviewed that was like, oh, and there was actually the shady side of it or, you know, everybody just seemed really happy about it and happy that they got to experience it. And it was really neat. Like history, I guess now the only negative thing is that like the history is like kind of at risk of being lost because they have to like digitize all of it. Is this like, is it Super 8 footage?
They have Super 8 footage. They have other footage too, but it's degrading. So, you know, they're doing what they can, but also they say like, well, what happens when we're gone? Like, is anyone going to take this
or
is it
care?
Just going to get thrown away?
Yeah, but it's like, so fascinating. I didn't know that there was porn at this time being made from the perspective of the viewer is the participant.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Like they even talked about how they specifically did that. Like that they felt the camera was the partner in the activity. So they would tell the models, you know, to basically have sex with the camera, which seems like kind of a trite thing that you hear now, like to get people to look sexy. But this is like, literally, we want you to look like you're doing this with the camera so that the viewer on the other side can feel like they're a participant in it. And that seemed like very ahead of its time.
Yeah. And the actors like talk to the camera as if it's a person kind
of. Yeah. Or that so you can imagine yourself in the scene with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
For sure.
I agree.
So yeah, very cool topic and one that I didn't, you know, expect to... I guess I didn't expect it to have such a, you know, in-depth documentary about it, but I'm glad somebody did it. I guess, was it a Kickstarter?
It was an Indiegogo.
Indiegogo, okay. Yeah, I'm glad that people are caring about it and, you know, trying to preserve the story and everything. They talk about how, you know, with the internet and DVDs and everything, they kind of were, they were already losing steam, I think, you know, just they, the two of them were doing all this work by themselves for so long, and then all these obstacles came up, like as soon as they sold something it would be digitized and people would be spreading it online and you know, that's all their hard work just being passed around for free. So they kind of stopped doing that and turned towards preserving everything that they had done. But very cool. I just think it's very neat.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So definitely a cool watch for Pride Month if you can handle the content. I wouldn't say, well, there is, I was going to say nothing is like disturbing, but I guess if you, you know, vomiting, and then some of the play is like...
some of it's a little rough.
Yeah, rough play. And also that thing that I really don't like is in it. So there are some... The thing I hate, there, it, you know, if you're if you're squeamish about certain sexual things, there might be some stuff that you might want to turn away from because they do show a fair bit. But it really is an interesting subject matter. I guess you could listen to it as if it were a podcast, you know, if you didn't want to actually watch it. I don't think it would lose anything, but it's still very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting, I remember they had an actual bodybuilder in some of their videos, right? And he was, like, famous. Like, he won a competition, and then he came in and started doing them with them. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a scandal, like, that was covered in the papers at the time. And he was just, like, whatever about it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, very cool. And with that, we will wrap up this extra beefy episode of Pixel Pixel. Happy Pride, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.